Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. And thank you so much for listening today. Today is July 14th, 2020. This is our 9 a.m. show, and I'm happy to have Stephanie Wadger, who's the President of National Council for the Social Studies. Excuse me while I clear my throat. Thank you. And Social Studies Consultant for the Iowa Department of Education. She's calling in from Des Moines, Iowa. We've also got Larry Paska, my good friend, the other Larry, who is the Executive Director of the National Council for the Social Studies. And it's a pleasure to have them both here. And we're going to have a nice show. We're going to talk about advocacy for social studies and race and equity, inclusion, all those things that are so important. And that's really important for social studies teachers. So I'm really looking forward to doing this show. We're going to archive at education-talkradio.org. We'll tweet it out over at EduTalkRadio, just like we always do. Please check out our online journal, ACE Equity and Access, over at ace-ed.org. That's the home site of our consortium, the American Consortium for Equity in Education, ace-ed.org. Go over there, join with us, make your voice heard for equity and access for all kids. We put together a beautiful magazine. There's a brand new issue up there. Please check it out. Everything we do over there is free. Okay, ace-ed.org. And without further ado, let me bring on my two guests. We'll start with Stephanie. Steph, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. It's my pleasure indeed. How's the weather in Iowa?
It's good right now, but expected to get some storms later today.
Well, I never heard of storms moving west, because we've got storms here in Maine right now, and thunderstorms. I'm waiting for a hailstorm right now to come over. By the way, if I lose you guys, that's the reason. I live in kind of rural Maine, about 40 minutes from Portland. They're expecting hail. I just put the car in the garage. We'll see what happens as we go forward. But I'm glad it's a nice day in Iowa. Good morning, Larry. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, Larry. How are you?
Yes. I'm pretty good, as a matter of fact. I got to tell you, the summer is kind of slogging by, and things are good, and people are I hope you take a minute to join our consortium. We've really been working on our equity consortium, okay? We'd love to have social studies in there, talking about equity and access for all kids. We just found ourselves in the catbird seat, okay? It's just great. We have this – have you ever heard of it, what we're doing, Steph?
I have, yes.
Good. Thank you. And please go over, join with us. We'd love to have more doing it. Again, it's ace-ed.org, and we're really trying to get stuff with equity, and we're doing pretty well on it. So I'm sorry I got long-winded on your answer. I'm doing fine, Larry.
That's okay.
That's really all you wanted to know, but I couldn't resist because we're really having a good time with the consortium. Sorry about that.
No, great work. Important work.
It is important work. What do you do, Steph, when you're not the president of National Council for the Social Studies and you put on your other hat for the Iowa Department of Education?
Sure. Officially my title is Social Studies Consultant, but essentially that means that I support social studies teachers in districts across the state and lots of things related to social studies. So, implementing our standards in Iowa, professional development, helping them with these issues of race, equity, inclusion.
Yes.
And most states have somebody in my position, and it's a really important position to help support teachers across states.
It sure is. And now more than ever, by the way, you're talking to an old social studies teacher, emphasis on both old and social studies. Okay. It was a lot easier when I did because the history curriculum was a lot shorter. There was so much less history back in those days. Okay. They can't do it today. Social studies is the one with the problem out there. Yeah, it's really something. And, Steph, you don't have to speak for Iowa, but since you're from Iowa, you work with the Department of Education, what's the word on school reopening out there? Is there anything going on yet?
Well, in Iowa, I think you're seeing across the country, it's very much left up to districts to sort of determine what works for their context. And so you're seeing a lot of that here, districts wrestling with, what makes the most sense for their infrastructure and in the context and, just even the number of students they have. We have really, really teeny tiny districts all the way up to fairly large districts. And so their context is certainly different.
Right. And actually, that's a very good way to say it, because every district really kind of has to make their own decision. Everybody's in chaos mode right now. But I was just wondering what had come down. Larry, what are you hearing from the social studies point of view? Anything going on with that?
With that, well, you know, one of the, as Stephanie had mentioned, you know, a lot of districts are kind of making local decisions. And one of the things that we're going to be ramping up for at NCSS is just ensuring that they're continues to be a focus on appropriate instruction in the school day and appropriate emphasis on social studies. I think one of the challenges when we kind of moved very quickly to remote learning last year is, you know, subjects like ours, you know, it's like how do you structure a full 8-period school day online? And especially with elementary learners, that was a challenge. So we're just going to be, you know, working on helping districts and states, I think, as an organization, just what's the guidance on how you do social studies well? How do you ensure that it's not left out of the instructional program? But, you know, so that's a challenge. But, you know, I live in Maryland. We were one of the first states, I think, to have guidelines for our districts about here are the different options you could consider in reopening. We only have a few, just over 20 districts because we're countywide. And just like our neighboring state, Virginia, you know, a lot of countywide schools. So those decisions are on a bigger scale, but they're still local. And, you know, again, I think the hard part of all this is making decisions right now for what's going to happen a month from now when you really don't know, you know,
that's
will infection rates rise? Will we have appropriate protections? The other worry we have right now, and we've been working with other coalitions on this, is just advocating for increased funding for both teacher professional development, but also for just the infrastructure and support in a school. We can't reopen when we're cutting budgets and we're talking about fewer resources. We actually need more resources
in our
schools right now. And so we'll be standing with several other organizations in education in the coming months just to make sure that, goodness, when we open a school, we have what teachers need to be safe and healthy, what kids need to be safe and healthy, but also that we have a learning environment that can handle and be nimble in this type of environment.
And also, it's not only just reopening the school. It's not only reopening the physical school. It's reopening education, okay? And everything, okay, you know, is changing. And we need more dollars. And the dollars I think we need beyond just the physical stuff is professional development. Because so many of our educators, and you guys can talk on this if you want, are not trained in online education. Okay, many of them have never even experienced online education. They took all their coursework live and in color and in person. Okay, and you know, all of a sudden they're into this position. All right, and we need to be able to train them to pretend that people know how to do this is even more absurd than, you know, wishing they could do it. Okay, it's just ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. Go ahead, Steph.
Well, I was just going to say,
Madam President,
I mean, kind of circling back to Larry's comment earlier, I think a concern connected to that is the, you know, a few rumblings, right, of schools that who are moving, I guess you could say, staff around to teach things like math and reading, especially at the elementary level and middle school level, even in a few Facebook groups that I'm in, teachers saying, you know, I was teaching social studies, but now I'm being moved to teach English language arts, you know, and we're getting essentially getting rid of social studies or reducing social studies for the year. And I think that's a huge concern for us as an organization. And I'm hoping that's, you know, not the norm, I guess, and that's a rare occurrence because that concerns us greatly.
It's scary stuff out there. Now, by the way, before we go on, Larry did tell you that now that you're president, you have full-time security and your own private jet. Sometimes each year he keeps that for himself, and I like to make sure that the new presidents know that that's actually – that he did get inform
that.
You on that.
Sure.
Good. Okay. Just in case. Hold
Larry,
him. Yes.
Larry, it's a virtual jet this year. It's a virtual jet, and
virtual
the security is virtual.
Good line. Okay. It's a virtual person. Yes, it's good. Serve yourself really good drinks on the flight. Okay, Steph? It's really good. buy the best gin and the best vodka.
Yeah.
Okay, and treat yourself. Okay, your president, Madam Wadger. Is it Wadger? Am I doing it right?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good. Okay, now we'll go back to Stephanie. Madam President, okay, POCUS, President of National Council for Social Studies.
President of the Council, yes.
President of the Council, POTIC, Okay. So what are your big goals this year? And you know, this is an interesting year for social studies, you know, with the unfortunate death of horrible death of Mr. Floyd and all the social justice and Black Lives Matter. This is all civics, this is all social studies. We're learning some incredible history lessons. I hate to boil it down to stuff, but it's the 1918 flu. What have we learned from that? It's a big year for social studies, in my opinion. I'm biased, okay? But how do you see it? What are your leadership goals this year, okay, for social studies?
Steph. Yeah. Well, I kind of break my goals down to three main goals this year. And I think these are really continued goals for the organization. But first, definitely elevating advocacy for social studies. That's
good.
Really always been one of my main things. I think especially being at a State Department of Education, you see how critical advocacy is. Second, really ensuring that we listen and lead on issues of racial justice, equity, and inclusion. And I think that the listen part is equally as important as the lead part. Because every organization, every individual really has a lot to learn and also try to take action on those issues. And then finally, just a continued focus on high-quality teaching and learning in social studies.
Yep.
And I think connected back to the advocacy part, sometimes when really connected to all these issues, I think sometimes the general thought of social studies is that we don't do high quality things. We don't do high quality teaching and learning in social studies. When people think of that, that's not, I think they think back to their own experience sometimes. And so we really need to make sure that we're messaging that social studies is all about solving complex problems. You know, we're seeing that right now, right? If things were really easy, the world would be a perfect place. So focusing on what does high quality teaching and learning look like, and that kind of thinking absolutely happens in social studies, I think is really critical for advocating for social studies and addressing issues of race, equity, and inclusion in the classroom.
Yeah, it's all those things are so important. When you say advocacy for social studies, okay, which I couldn't agree with you more, and just let's microcosm where you work in Iowa, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not putting Iowa on the spot per se. I'm just asking you because you happen to be in the State Department of Education in Iowa, all right? So my question is, as Iowa looks at social studies, and maybe we can extrapolate out a little bit, okay, what are you seeing? Does Iowa, again, as an example, see the importance of social studies in times like these? Because social studies has kind of gone a little to the wayside, which always ticked me off, for STEM, okay? And as important as STEM is, okay, nothing happens in STEM, but they only do it for the sake of society and civilization, okay?
Absolutely.
So you got to understand the impact of what you do. I could get on that for a whole TED Talk, but I'm not going to do it. But how's Iowa looking at social studies these days?
Well, I think we absolutely value social studies here, and I don't think anybody. I think the interesting thing is nobody would tell you. I don't think anybody would say social studies is not important or not valued. I think it's often in Iowa, and probably, you know, I think this would be true for across the country. That old adage of kind of show me your budget, I'll tell you what you value. show me what you're prioritizing in terms of time, and I'll tell you what you value. So it's not that people don't value it. I think that sometimes because of other pressures, they elevate other things, even if it's to the detriment of social studies, and not really, you know, thinking about the value beyond, you know, again, going back to my earlier point, some people viewing it as just, we're just teaching dates and facts and random things, rather than it really is about trying to solve those complex problems that the world and that the country faces.
Yeah, it is so important. And thank you. That was a good little overview there. Larry, what do you see? You know, we're talking about race and inclusion and advocacy for social studies. To me, it's more important now than ever. Civics, I can go right down a whole list. Okay. What are you seeing nationally from that? Larry.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, I would say we often, you know, we talk a lot about our concerns with marginalization, and they are real. Many times, though, I think in public space we hear a lot what I kind of call this deficit model. You know, we're just assuming that no child anywhere is getting any kind of historical understanding. There's, you know, absolutely no civic engagement. You know, kids aren't prepared for civic life. And I really would like to see us work on a model of let's take a look at what actually is happening, how kids are demonstrating civic engagement, pride in civic learning, being active, the clubs they're joining, the activities they're doing. Many of these are extracurricular. If you just look at, I mean, I would argue that there are literally hundreds of student-focused groups right now, all committed to civic learning. They're supporting the school day. They're enriching instruction. They're giving instructional resources to teachers. So, while we have to acknowledge where there is not learning happening and we need to ensure that it does happen, you know, those instructional moments are not there. At the same time, we also do see that these are a generation of kids. They are wanting civic engagement. They want to step up and lead.
Absolutely.
They want to participate, and they're not going to wait until they get their bachelor's degree to go do it. And so, you know, we've met. In fact, it was Stephanie, one of the students in Stephanie's state I met last year, who was starting a civic organization of his own. There are plenty of students out there that we can learn from, and I know there are plenty of teachers behind them that are supporting them. So when I look at what's happening right now, there are many events kind of culminating together at once. This does highlight the importance of social education and why it's important that we provide resources to teachers and we give them what they need to help their kids be successful. But I also think these moments in time are opportunities for us to take stock and say social education is vital. It will help us solve these societal issues and concerns that we're having right now. It will help us to understand our history and how we grow forward. And let's have a conversation about how social studies is the answer for this and bring that together. So again, we have to, you know, we do have to know where the deficiencies are and where things aren't happening. But I do want to start with this, you know, conversation of what are kids doing well, what are teachers successful with, and then how do we help support our teachers and our kids even better? Because, you know, we should never start with this, what are people not getting? Instead, it should be, what are they getting? And then how do we scale that and make that even stronger for all?
Hear, hear. And well said. What do you think, Steph?
I completely agree. I mean, I think we're seeing young people, even in the last month, right, in last year, be very active. And I hope that certainly some of that is a result of social studies education. I think for me, I was a former high school teacher, and one of, I think, the key areas that I think a lot about, especially in my day job and now in this role, is really what do social studies look like at the elementary level. And I think that from a policy perspective is often, you know, very ignored, not on purpose necessarily, but a lot of the attention seems to land on, do we require certain courses at the high school level? And I think that's very important. But I think the well-documented sort of decline of attention to social studies at the elementary level, I think, is the key area to focus on. There's this great quote, and I'm probably paraphrasing it poorly, but essentially it talks about how children are born into social studies. And because of that, when they're early, they really start forming ideas about the world and about them, their own role as members of the community very early on. And so oftentimes I feel like if we're addressing, if we're ignoring, I shouldn't say ignoring, that's probably not the right word. If we're marginalizing social studies the most, the research would point to students maybe get about 10% of their instructional time is social studies at the elementary level. Then I worry that we're missing out on a key time developmentally to really engage students around their role as members of society. Even in my own, I have a 7-year-old son, and I was picking him up before the coronavirus from school, and we were doing the normal, what was your day like? What did you do? And he said, he was telling me about the day, and then he said, Mom, we didn't have any social studies again. And I said, well, thanks for the update. And he kind of paused me, and he said, Mom, does that mean that people don't care about the world? And I just found that to be so profound that he really, I mean, I've never directly told him that. that social studies is necessarily about caring about the world. But he had really
funny.
Been thinking about that and really kind of internalized that. And I'm sure there are lots of other students across the country that that have had that same experience. So I think that's a really key thing that we need to hone in on.
Yeah, and that's actually a great point. You know, I think social studies teachers, they are normally middle school and high school teachers, okay? Social
right.
studies teachers, they need to advocate very strongly. We can talk a whole show about how teachers advocate for more social studies and understanding that it ties into all the other subjects, which I believe it actually
mm-hmm.
does, okay? But I'm
mm-hmm.
curious, Steph, and well, I'll ask you first, and Larry can chime in if he wishes. Okay, how do we get more social? What's the way? And I know you don't have the answer, okay, per se, but what's
mm-hmm.
the best way to start getting social studies more into elementary school? And again, we're in stranger times than ever, okay, especially with the
sure.
with the remote stuff. But just in general, how do we get more social studies in there? What's the path of advocacy that you
sure.
see?
Right. Well, I think one of the main ways is a really strong connection, not just from a research perspective, but also just sort of common sense perspective, is reading. It's through reading that, you know, students are most engaged when they're reading about the world, about other people. And research really suggests that in order to promote reading comprehension, students need strong background knowledge about what they're reading. And that, I think, is mainly from social studies and science kinds of materials. So I think one easy way, because schools do focus so much on reading and math, is to show that research that instead of teaching reading in isolation, really integrate it well with the reading time, and so you're getting
mm-hmm. I love that.
You're getting social studies in that way. I think the other way
I love that
the connection that we're talking about with I mean you probably heard about social emotional learning, and of course
oh, yeah.
all of the discussion about you know equity, and sometimes I in Iowa use the phrase windows and mirrors that you know social studies is all about providing windows for students to other people, other places, but it's also the curriculum should also be reflective of the students you have. And so I think that is for most elementary teachers in particular, that's a big connection because they get that kind of social emotional learning component. And imagine if I'm, you know, a student of color, I'm somebody who traditionally is, you know, kind of a marginalized voice in society, and
mm-hmm.
nothing in the curriculum reflects, you know, my background. Imagine how traumatic that is, you know, from my experience, you know, going through elementary school or K-12 school. So I think those are some of the key points in my mind that I think about when we're thinking about what how to advocate for elementary social studies.
You know, that was a great answer, by the way. That was absolutely excellent. And I know Larry agrees. I'm going to ask him to delve a little deeper into that if he wants to. But I have to say something. I have a new best friend in the world, Ashley Berner. Ashley's a professor at Johns Hopkins. She's been on my show recently, and she's an absolute expert in making sure that kids have a rigorous curriculum. And people,
mm-hmm.
this is interesting. People tend to any kid will do a rigorous
mm-hmm.
curriculum if they are engaged
mm-hmm.
in their learning. Okay.
Absolutely.
And if I'm going to use your example of African American kids or kids of color, I guess you could do Latin America too. But let's just focus African American for a second. If we engage kids by making the curriculum relative to them and reflective of their situation, so to speak, their color, however you want to say that, you can make the curriculum as rigorous as you want, okay? And they will rise to the occasion. We've been, because we have not been giving that kind of culturally responsive curriculum, we are actually cheating the kids because we are kind of forcing them to lose interest. Okay, and we are
mm-hmm.
in an age now where we can assign different things to different kids to make it relative to them, all with the same goal of, quote, in your example, good one, learning to read. Okay, it's that simple. So you're brilliant, Stephanie.
Right.
You're right on target there. Brilliant. Okay. Now for the opposite view. Here's Larry Paskin.
Not opposite at all.
Dr. Paskin, we'll be fair.
Ditto plus one. Everything we say now on Zoom calls to agree. What I want to expand upon a little bit is you know, take us back a little bit in our history. And this is not a slight on past education reform errors in any sense, not at all. But you know, over a decade ago, when we had a nationwide focus on the Common Core learning standards, and I know that that phrase has just become a bad word, and it's unfortunate because there really was a concerted effort to say, let's look at how you develop literacy and numeracy skills in all students. I think the challenge at the time that Common Core was introduced is we stopped at the definition of literacy as you know, one's ability to read and write. We didn't really think of literacy as really that whole function of thinking, that to be literate is to be a thinker, and how you think and how you make meaning of the world doesn't just take an ability to read and write. It takes an ability to also understand different ways of thinking, ways in which we process information. We process the world through an understanding of geographic reasoning. We process it through historical thinking. We process it through, you know, the physical sciences. And you know, now I'm not on Wikipedia, I promise, but I did go to dictionary.com, and just when you look at the definition of literacy, dictionary.com, basic resource, right? You know, the first definition is ability to read and write. You go down just two, the third definition of literacy is one's knowledge of a particular subject or field. That's the part I think we left out a decade ago, and now we're scrambling to catch back up on. So as Stephanie pointed out, you know, research shows, right, reading and write to do what? So when NAEP test results a few years ago were released, one of the findings, and there was a panel of scholars, of experts that spoke to this, one of the findings was, you know, we really need to have a grounding in content knowledge early, that kids at the elementary level need to be reading texts in disciplines.
Yeah.
That is how they build that knowledge and the love of the world. As with Stephanie, I share, we share seven-year-olds at home, so I have two seven-year-olds.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they will come home and they'll ask questions like, I need to see a map right now. And I'm like, why? Why now? I mean, yes, we want to show you maps. Why now? I have to understand how it is. I was born in New York, but I live in Maryland. Like, show me the distance between the two. Show me why they're different. Why, you know, and so that's inquiry, right? It starts there
that's
and it
great.
Continues on.
That's
but
great.
We have to nurture that. We have to nurture that. Our school days have to be structured around fostering those questions and allowing kids to explore them. Because they want to know, they're hungry about the world, they need to know how it works, they're asking desperately for it. And that's not just what social studies does, that's all disciplines do that, but it's not just reading and writing as an independent activity, like by reading lots of books you'll just suddenly become literate. No, it's by reading about the world, by understanding our past and our shared common experiences, by understanding and reflecting and reading about and writing about our shared differences, you know, things that unite and divide us, by
Good
asking
point.
Those questions. But it starts early. We've got to start at elementary level because, darn it, when our kids come home and they're asking these questions, you know, they should also have, you know, some tools or ways that they've already been thinking about how to answer that question. And then our job as parents and, of course, teachers and everyone that's supporting a child's life can say, okay, here's how to help answer that question. You want to know about what's the difference between where you were born and where you live now? We have resources to help you.
And how do we get those thoughts? So I got to ask, how do we get all these thoughts into the minds of school boards, for one, but certainly district administration, curriculum directors, and principals of elementary schools? How do we get those? Now, we're trying here. We try to talk to everybody here, okay? But the NCSS wants to get what we're saying into the hearts and minds of the people who can really make a difference. And I'll stay with Larry for a second. Larry, Dr. Paskin, how do we do that? What's the way to advocate into the elementary? Because what you're both saying is exactly right. Anybody listening would agree with you. But we got to get the word out all year long, all the time. What's the best way to do that besides Education Talk Radio? Larry.
Well, yep. So we've been kind of pushing over the years on kind of a bottom-up and top-down approach. You know, sometimes it literally starts in the supermarket line. And, you know, even when we're distanced in lines, we can still ask the questions of our friends, right, that we see. We can say, what's happening in social studies? You know, can you just tell me what is your child learning right now in school? It starts by asking those questions, you know, and sometimes it even starts with, you know, your school board meetings are televised. you know, just asking the question as a resident of the community, hey, I'm just curious, what's happening with our social studies program right now? I'm excited to learn more about how our kids are learning. You know, that I think that puts us all on, you know, just that gives us awareness that we have to focus on this, that our community members are asking for it. They want to know about it. We talk about, you know, when we have parent-teacher conferences, I'll just ask the questions, tell me a little bit about, you know, the social studies program, what skills are they learning? You know, this isn't to put people in a negative spot. It's merely to say we're building awareness that this is important and we want to focus on it.
Important.
And I think it does come from it really at a grassroots level starts with the community asking. When I was a district director of social studies, when the question got asked, you know, we prepared evidence of what we were doing well and areas where we wanted to improve. That also helped us as administrators to say, here are areas where we would need more resources or more community support for us to increase the elementary program. At a top-down level, though, we're continuing at NCSS to hone the message of the marginalization is real and has had a detrimental effect on elementary-level learning, which then carries us through graduation. We are concerned kids are not prepared for civic life when they don't experience it K-12 every day. It also, at a top level, we're also saying it's not just that. It's we need a greater emphasis on professional learning for teachers. We need to ensure that there are high-quality assessments for social studies of learning, and we also need to ensure that, again, it's part of a high-quality curriculum K-12 every day. And these recommendations are supported by our colleagues at the Council of Chief State School Officers. This is just recommended practice that we can use as talking points from both a kind of that high systemic level right through to a community grassroots level.
That's a great answer. Anything to add to that one, Steph? That was a good one.
It was a good one. Yeah.
Yeah, I think pretty much summed it up. Yeah. Go ahead.
Sorry, you took all my talking points. From a parent perspective,
I want you to know that was actually Stephanie's answer. Larry was just reading it. That's all there is to it, right?
Okay. Found it on Wikipedia. Right?
Yes. There you go. There you go.
I was going to say, from a parent perspective, I think one of the things I have realized is that I'm not sure that many parents realize that their elementary students are probably not getting a lot of social studies. So I think one of the things is, as a parent, asking those questions, just like Larry said, you know, go to the school, go to the district curriculum director, if there is one, or the principal, and say, you know, or ask what amount of time are we getting, but also what does that curriculum look like? Is it curriculum that promotes inclusion, equity, addresses issues of race, you know, those kinds of things. And if not, then what can you do as a parent, you know, to advocate that changes? Because I think, you know, just like anything, if people are paying attention to something, if people are putting pressure, you know, on their district to make some changes, then you're more likely to see those changes. I think also teachers, you know, again, sometimes as a high school teacher, I mean, I didn't know what the elementary teachers were doing or not doing.
Same with me. Same exact thing. I had no conceivable idea. Yeah.
You just assume, right? And so I think if you're a secondary teacher, questions at the district level and having more of those conversations is really important as well. And when we talk about advocacy, Larry turned me use this phrase, we talk about little A, big A advocacy. And by little A, we mean, you know, what are those kind of informal things that you can do that oftentimes lead to the more big A sort of policy change things? And oftentimes that's more of the way that you can make change are some of those informal things, you know, like letters to the editor and calling up organizations or talking with organizations.
I love letters
that
to the editor.
Sort of, exactly.
I love
so,
it.
I think there's a lot that people can do to really advocate for social studies.
And they really have to. And keep in mind, every social studies teacher also belongs to a community. Okay, they live somewhere. Okay, they can advocate for this, whether it's in their district or their home district where their residence is, if it's not the same place. They can do this kind of advocacy. And I got to tell you something. You know, we talk about advocacy, but we're also talking about race and equity and inclusion. And it's from the very beginning, more than any other subject, social studies opens the door for all of those things. It engages the kids, and it gets them to understand the place for all these things in our society. Okay? And so, really, social studies, if I may, and I know I'm biased, but it's true, I think social studies is the key to opening the door, okay, from the very beginning of schooling. For you can quote me on this or use these quotes. You don't have to quote me. Take them for yourself. Social studies will open the door for race, for equity, for inclusionary education. It's that simple. Okay,
Absolutely.
And please, you don't have to pay me for those quotes. They're yours. Okay, just steal them. Okay, and that's.
Yeah,
you know, I want to ask something. I'm going to ask Larry on this one, and Steph can join in if you want to. Okay, but Larry, remote learning. All right. Everybody's trying. Bless everybody's hearts for trying. Okay, we're not perfect. Most teachers have never even been taught anything with remote learning. We mentioned that earlier. Okay, but to focus on NCSS, as you look at this situation we all find ourselves in, as your social studies teachers, how is NCSS helping with teaching people how to teach or giving them the resources? I don't even know if you are doing any of that for social studies education remotely, and I'm talking about K-12, not just elementary. Is there anything you guys are putting forward?
Yeah. So right away, starting in mid-March, we saw that we needed to pivot to providing more online professional learning support. So several of our member groups, including we have a community for technology, so people that focus on learning technology in the social studies, they presented with us on basically how you transition to online learning during the pandemic and beyond. We most recently had we have a committee for government and public relations that led a webinar that led a webinar on doing advocacy and advocating for social studies during this time. So we're ramping up our online learning series for educators. We're going to be structuring programming kind of in different ways. Some are led by our individual committees and communities. Some are invited speakers that are coming in and talking about their work and how it relates to several of the topics we're talking about today.
Cool.
We also do have a usually like a fall and spring webinar series where several of our members will lead in learning, but we're finding that the topics are really focusing right now on how you talk and teach about racism, how you talk and teach about online learning, that kind of thing. The biggest, so really all of our programming is pivoting virtually at this point. We have two summer institutes that we are doing fully online. In fact, Stephanie is leading one next week. Our Summer Leadership Institute is fully online, and it's building capacity for leaders and advocacy. The big thing I'm pleased to announce is we are also pivoting our annual conference to be virtual. So December 4th through 6th is our first ever.
Yeah,
it's our first ever fully virtual conference. You know, 200-plus sessions. We're posting them online. They'll be accessible to our members throughout the year. And it's, you know, again, the learning doesn't stop. In fact, it's more urgent than ever, but we're finding newer ways online to provide that experience. And we think this year having that virtual conference, first, it keeps everybody safe. We know educators are stressed and unable to travel, and this just isn't the environment. But we have a lot to talk about. We have a lot to do.
Yeah.
And
the
sessions that were proposed to us initially, they're still very relevant. They're important in this time. And, you know, again, this has been a learning curve for us, but I think, you know, I've been really pleased with everybody, just both from our staff, the board, all of our active leaders and members. We've pivoted very quickly to provide that level of support. We have resources on our website about teaching about racism and racial injustice. We have a whole resource page on teaching through COVID that includes access to all of our webinars, access to other links and resources that are curated from our publications. So again, we're just trying to provide greater online access to teaching both during and through the pandemic, but also as many of the current national discussions are so heavily social studies focused. We're also going to be depending on our listeners, people joining NCSS, blogging, writing with us, submitting articles to our publications. You know, we're really depending on the voice of all educators to come to NCSS and use it as their professional home to share how they are learning and leading as educators during this critical time.
And I'll tell you, every one of your members should really be bringing, and I mean this sincerely because now it's easier because it's all done virtually. Every single one of them, every member, should bring their principal with them. okay, when they quote visit the conference. Okay, there's no excuse now. Like, well, we can't afford it. It's not in the budget. Okay, they can come. Okay, and I'll tell you. All right, you don't have the time. No, you do have the time now because it's virtual. All right, and the social studies are the key to getting this done, to getting kids engaged in their own culture, to make schooling relevant, get the kids truly, truly engaged, and bring about an understanding of race equity and inclusion. And by the way, since you're talking about racism, there's nothing to be afraid of about talking with racism. A lot of people are scared. I hope our social studies teachers are not. Okay? The time has come. All right? So, Steph, good job. Hey, Steph, I called you Stephanie Wodger, but do you like you used to be Stephanie Rosenberg Wodger. Which do you like? I just noticed that.
Really, any combination is good. So whatever makes the most sense. Probably Stephanie Wagger, just to keep it short.
Okay, and it's Wagger. I've been saying it with a softer G. Wagger is what you like.
Yeah, it was a joke. You have to, you know, it's the German. You got to get the hard G in there.
Wagger. Wagger. Okay, it's good. Because it looks like the word wager. It could go any way.
It does.
Okay, you could be a wager.
Yes, it does.
Okay, I bet on it. That was a joke. Get it, Larry?
Bet
wager.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, Steph, congratulations, and I'm sorry you won't be able to be crowned at the conference live and in color. Okay.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, but you'll have a great time. I send. By the way, Larry, I make sure we get press releases on any of the things you're doing virtually, so that we can get them up there for everybody. Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, we appreciate your support. And your last comment about principals is so important. Many school administrators are former social studies teachers. This conference is a way to celebrate their learning. It's not just about increasing classroom practice. I'm hoping what you see in the coming year, and I think Stephanie articulated, is we're trying to also provide thought leadership around social studies instruction. So it really is critical
that
all who support social studies educators, you know, our librarians, our counselors, our English language arts educators, our language instructors, everyone sees that there's a home here to think about how you lead through the social studies. It really is an open invitation for all professionals to join us.
I'm telling you, I count myself as one. We're in the social studies mode right now. We're in the catbird seat, so let's take full advantage of it. I got to leave. Guys, you're just wonderful. Thank you so much. And have a great and great day and stay safe. Okay? Promise me that.
You too, Larry. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Talk to you later.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Thank you, Steph. That was the folks from NCSS, the National Council for the Social Studies. Stephanie Wagger. Wagger. I'll try that. Wagger. Okay. Stephanie is the Wager. Do what you want. President of the National Council for the Social Studies. Okay. And she is a full-time social studies consultant for the Iowa Department of Education in Des Moines. Larry, Dr. Pasca, is, of course, the executive director of NCSS, a group I love working with. We're going to archive the show at education-talkradio.org. Tweet it out at EduTalkRadio. Please go over. Join with us over our Consortium for Equity at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. All right, my name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Can't thank you enough for listening. Please, I know it's hot in a lot of places. Stay safe on that. It's bad weather with storms in the Midwest today. Stay safe on that. Here it's thundering day. I'll stay safe and stay safe with the pandemic. I'm Larry Jacobs.